Hello everyone and welcome to Radio Edgy Talk. This is David Noble in Dalgetty Bay in Fife, and the second time of trying, I'm delighted to welcome Danny Murphy of the University of Edinburgh to the show. And over the next 20 or 25 minutes, we're going to be talking about leadership in a democratic society. Danny, just to start off with, could you remind listeners about your background in education?
How long have you got?
You've plenty of time.
Yeah, okay. I did quite a lot of different jobs in Scottish education, but before I actually started in Scotland, I felt after I qualified at Murray House in the mid-70s, I didn't want to go straight into a school and never have experienced anything else. So I did a stint volunteering in the east coast of Malaysia in an area that was 97% Muslim, because I really wanted to experience living in a different culture and working in a different setting. And when I came back to Scotland, I worked for a while in with kids who'd been excluded semi-permanently from school. And that was a very important experience for me. I felt these were the kids who'd been cast out, if you like. And I took that into my first job in teaching as a learning support teacher in a mainstream school. And then I worked my way through the ranks, if you like. I just kept on thinking I could do a better job than somebody else, I suppose. So I was a head of department. I worked in a local authority. And then I was a deputy head. I was a head teacher in three different schools. And one point, when they introduced a qualification for headship, I went and worked at the university leading that when it first started. I got a bit fed up with that. I ended up wanting to be back in a school, which is where education really takes place, I think, on the whole. School education, anyway, obviously. And then when I retired from that in 2010, I did another spell of volunteering abroad in Cambodia. Fascinating experience. And since I came back, I've been working on the leadership programs at the university again. So that's my 40 years in a nutshell, David.
And we're talking around leadership in a democratic society this evening, and that's the title of one of your chapters in the third edition of the book School Leadership. So again, just for the benefit of listeners, could you tell us a little bit about the book School Leadership and about maybe what readers can expect in the most up-to-date edition?
Yeah, well, this is as you say, it's the third edition of the book. It started with Jim O'Brien, a retired professor at Edinburgh, and Janet Draper, who at that time was working in Edinburgh as well, and myself when I first went to Edinburgh in the year 2000 and worked at the university there. We felt that there was lots of publications for trainee school leaders coming from England, from North America, from Australia. There was nothing written from a Scottish perspective with a sense of where we'd come from and where we were going in Scotland. So the first edition of the book came out, I think, 2005. And it was just Janet, Jim and myself that wrote that. And then it was quickly followed by another edition about 2008, updating for all the new things that were happening. And then this latest edition that came out, I think it was just earlier this year, Jim took over the overall editorship of it because we brought in a couple of other authors, Christine Ford and Marjorie McMahon from Glasgow, and attempted to really widen the book out and look at the whole range of issues on the agenda on the school leader's desk, if you like, in Scotland today, while acting, I suppose, as a kind of textbook for the trainee, the new training programme for head teachers in Scotland and for school leaders more generally. So that's the function of the book, and it seems to be selling quite well. Not that we get any money from it, really, but its function is really just to, as I say, act as a stimulus for those who are intending to go into school leadership of one form or another, to stimulate their thinking and to support their experience, giving them the ideas and concepts that I felt were lacking when I first became a head teacher in the early 90s. And really, your quality as a head teacher was a kind of 50% mixture of who you were and what you brought to the table and what experiences you had and whether you'd learn from them, and what you'd learn from them. So it's quite a narrow background, really, for what is nowadays a very complicated job. And as I say, these other countries, England, Australia, Canada, other English-speaking countries, already had very well-developed literature on what it was like to be a school leader. So we added our own, as I say, our own kind of Scottish bit of that with the Spook School leadership.
And just with reference to that particular chapter of the book School Leadership, Danny, to start off with, could you outline the challenges of school leadership in a democracy?
Well, I think today there are a lot of challenges because people want different things from their schools and people in the schools want different things from the school. And a lot of the choices that have to be made in specific schools will end up on the head teacher's desk if they're contentious or they're difficult choices. And schools are, after all, or most schools certainly in Scotland, are a public service provided by the state using taxpayers' money. So there has to be some accountability for what happens in the school. But that accountability is complicated because as the lead professional, if you like, in inverted commas, working in the school, the head teacher or school leader is accountable vertically to the local authority and professionally to the inspectorate and so on, but also is accountable directly to the people right in front of them, the teachers and the pupils and the parents of that school community. And sometimes they don't necessarily agree with what national government or the local authority thinks is the right way forward. So there are always lots of tensions to be resolved. And of course, that is the nature of democratic society. We have different values. We're a plural society, a diverse society. People have different interests and see themselves as having different needs. And somehow or another, we decide to, you know, whose values and whose needs are prioritized in a particular situation. And some of that comes down to decisions in the school. So a democracy is really, I think, at the heart of public schooling. You know, it's our democracy that provides public schooling for all and determines its overall character, what its purposes are. And it's democracy that determines whether or not a school is functioning well. So all these things, I think, have to be explored as part of what school leadership is about.
And can you give any examples from your research or your own experiences as a school leader of these kind of tensions between public policy and local judgment?
Well, often these come down to individual cases. You know, in general terms, you know, research tells us what an effective school looks like, the kinds of things that go on in effective, so-called effective schools, what a good education system nationally looks like. In general terms, we can say what this is. But when you come down to specific cases, what the generality says about an individual child may not suit that child at that time, you know, and particularly as children get older and assert their own independence and want to make their own choices. You know, I think there's always a tension between the children who feel they're not getting very much out of school and what the school is asking of them and what society is asking of them through the school. And so you've got that kind of bottom-up and top-down tension quite often with some of the children in the school. And simple thing, I mean, there's other areas like school meals, you know. We want our children to be eating healthy, but the children don't always want to eat healthy. So do you go down the road of force and requirements, or as most of us who've had or have teenage children know, do you have some kind of negotiation and discussion? And, you know, these are the kinds of tensions that need resolved at school level. Another classic one very often between parents and children is school uniform. Very often parent councils and so on want a strong uniform policy for the school, and quite often quite a few of the young people don't actually appreciate that. They want to wear something else. So all these kind of, they may seem like small local things that, you know, should be sorted out, but in our society, if we're wanting our children to be empowered to learn how to express responsible choices and so on, and not just tell them what to do, you've got to bring the children into the discussion, and parents want to be part of the discussion. And so there's an area there that's about debate within the community and discussion within the community, and that discussion doesn't always sympathise with or accept what national authority or local government might be saying. I mean, local government have to manage the budget. you know, they may have to make some decisions that are budget driven, and parents want the budget to favour their school and not every other school. So, you know, it's those kinds of tensions that can arise. But I think specifically for an educator, the most difficult ones are where you feel that the system, which you're employed to make work well, wants to force children into a particular mould, whereas you can see in the child that their real talent or their ability or their interests, you know, is taking them in a different direction, and you want to nurture that as well. So it's finding that balance, and I think, in fact, you know, one of the key messages in any democratic society, for me anyway, is about balancing our different values, because our values don't always agree, you know, and we're, even where we agree that certain values are important, they don't always work with each other all the time, and you have to find the best way of balancing them in a particular situation. I mean, in the chapter, I draw attention to what I describe, and drawing on an American political philosopher, Dahl, I use his idea that actually at the root of democracy are some fundamental value tensions in democratic living, between, for example, if we use the old French Revolution terminology from the 18th century, between liberty and equality. You know, the more that you increase individual freedom, the more inequality you'll end up creating. So in order to have equality, you have to have a degree of social control that limits the degree of inequality by controlling people and limiting their choice, for example, to spend their own income as they wish. You know, we tax some of it so that we can take some of it to equalize things like healthcare and education and so on. So balancing out liberty and equality is a fundamental aspect of democratic living. And that's just as true in a school setting, that these tensions are found in school between, as the youngsters want to express themselves and express their own individuality and make their own choices, but at the same time there's a degree of control that's saying, no, you need to know these things, you need to learn these things, this is a framework for your education to develop you as a future citizen and an autonomous individual who feels they can make their way in the world. So those are the kinds of tensions I think are at play in our schooling. Obviously, that's a very general description, but in the book we give a few more examples. And in one of my earlier books, I talk about how sometimes these tensions spill out into what a school leader might experience as a dilemma, where they have to choose. You know, maybe they feel that the best thing for a particular child is not, you know, what that child is required to, you know, we used to have these arguments with children about whether they had to study a modern language after the age of 14. And it's great for Scotland as a whole that more and more of our children learn more and more modern languages. But when you're sitting with an individual child who sees this as a point of conflict, that his or her desire is not being listened to or met or whatever, and it may be the hair that breaks that particular camel's back and decides him or her, this school isn't interested in me. Those kind of negotiations take place on a daily basis in our schools, and I think are a very strong aspect of how our democracy is trying to bring its children up.
Danny, I noticed that in one part of the chapter you say that teachers and head teachers find themselves mediating in the space between national policy expectations and that of parents and children in the community, and you've touched on that already. And yet elsewhere you state that certainly in Scotland, and I think this is maybe to do with the relatively new suite of professional standards, that teachers are not value neutral. So that sounds as if things can be quite messy within schools.
Yeah, well, I mean, at one extreme, I mean, as a head teacher, I've sat in my office and had a kid tell me that, you know, when I was calling the youngster to account and talking to them about racial abuse that they'd been guilty of in the school, and, you know, the child saying to me, no, says, my dad says I can have whatever opinion I like, and I can express my opinion, that's my democratic right. So you've got that at one extreme. And obviously, most of us, and certainly all of us in education, would say, well, that's what we're in education for, is to get young people to see, no, you're living in a democracy, which means other people have rights. And so your rights are sometimes curbed in the interests of their rights, just as their rights are sometimes curbed in the interests of your rights. And learning about what living in a democracy with each other is about. So that's part of it. But I think also the mediation of these tensions does come with certain values. The teaching profession in Scotland now espouses certain values. It espouses, for example, in the standards for all teachers in Scotland, not just school leaders, because the suite of standards for all teachers has the same values underpinning them. So all teachers in Scotland are expected to be committed, for example, to sustainability. Now, that may seem a very big general concept, but it does play down into specific things, you know, to do with, let's say, global warming or, in the environment in Scotland and so on. We're all committed to being respectful of gender identity, being respectful of different religions. You know, these may seem like fairly bland democratic values to many listeners, but believe me, in a school community, you will find people who don't accept these values and have different views about what's right. So that's what I mean in the sense that teachers cannot be value neutral. They're not just mediating, they're also educating, and they're educating for a democratic future. And so these kinds of values that are very much part of our liberal, plural, diverse democracy, these are the kind of values teachers are expected to espouse in Scotland. And indeed, if teachers didn't espouse these values, then people would be asking, well, can you be a teacher in a Scottish state school?
So with that in mind, to what extent and how well do you think Scottish schools in general are training pupils for living in a democracy?
Well, I think this is a good question. And I mean, my view over, I mean, I was at one time in my life a modern studies teacher, David, so you'll appreciate it. I've been wrestling with these thoughts, not just as a school leader, but in all my life as a teacher. And my kind of formula for this is that schools are in a democracy. They are training and developing and educating young people for democratic living as adults in a democracy. But also, to some extent, they are representative in their character of what democratic life is or should be like. And all these three things join together. So schools are in a democracy in that, you know, nowadays, particularly in Scotland, we have 16-year-olds voting in local authority elections. So if you're a 16-year-old in a school, you're electing the councillors who at the end of the day decide the policies and the budgets that will affect your own schooling. So there's a much more direct relationship now between some of the electorate who are themselves attending school and the elected representatives who are overall in charge of the provision of schooling in that local authority. But also, of course, in the national government in Scotland, who overall direct and manage education policy for the country. We as teachers are public servants, we're operating as professionals, we're paid to do our job. All these things that are characteristic of state provision are all characteristic of the vast majority of our schools in Scotland. And so young people learn as they go up through the school that this is how democracy works, that the services that are provided to them by their parents paying taxes are not just bought privately on the whole, although in some cases they are, but for most children in Scotland, they're bought as part of a system of national provision that's designed to ensure fairness and equality and inclusion and all these other things. So that's schooling in democracy. Schooling for democracy is, you know, as I talked about earlier, it's about helping young people to get involved, to become engaged, to feel part of their society through their community of their school initially, and also to see how society works, where they fit in it. I don't think we've quite fitted that in Scotland yet. We don't quite, I don't think, do that very well, because our schooling system places a priority, I still believe, on competitiveness at the end of the school career through a system of competitive examinations, which ranks children's value on only one scale, how well they perform in the examinations. And some young people see that and see themselves as having less value in society's eyes because of how they're measured in that way. And I think my belief is that we need a broader way of catching the qualities of what young people bring to the table, not just how they fit into one particular competition. Albeit it's an important competition, it's important to improve standards and all the rest of it. But at the end of the day, there's an element of competition there which doesn't value every child equally in the way that I would like to see us do more formally in our system. And the schools often still try to do that because of the way they treat the young people, to respect them equally and give them a sense, however you perform in examinations, you have equal value. And you do things and you bring things to the table which we think are great and worth nurturing and cultivating and bringing into your young adulthood. And that's where the schooling as democracy, I think, comes in as well, because, I mean, people know it's an organisation. It's not democratic in the sense that you have a referendum every day about what's going to happen in the school. But it's democratic in the sense that it's part of a public system of accountability, and that core democratic values like equal respect for each individual, you know, equal value, the equal value of each individual, the fact that the community needs to be supported, as well as, you know, it's that balance between the extent to which the community is supporting the individual and the individual is engaging with the community, finding that right balance. So the way that the school operates, I think, is an important part of that. We're getting much better. Over my 40-year career, I've seen us get much, much better involving the pupils' voice through things like assemblies, you know, respecting and valuing the children at big assemblies of the whole school, where different individuals with different talents can get up and speak or can be applauded for what things that they've done. You know, these are important things that we do now that give young people a sense of engagement and involvement and worth and being part of a community that's also valuable. You know, the school itself needs to be valued, because if we don't value the community we live in, we're not valuing ourselves either. So, you know, there's all that stuff goes on in a school, which I think is very important about living in a democracy, because it's not just about the big political stuff. It's also about the face-to-face stuff. And that's where the third French Revolution slogan comes in. If I go back to the origins of our modern democracies in the 18th century, the word fraternity, now obviously that has a kind of gendered meaning, but basically I think it's more about face-to-faceness. It's about, you know, you can't have a democracy that doesn't have face-to-face care and love and concern and compassion and good face-to-face relationships. You know, what's the point in having, you know, liberty if you haven't got good relationships in your personal life? So I think that concept and value of fraternity that they identified in the 18th century as part of the mix of democracy is a very important one. So to summarise, schools are democratic because they're in a democracy. They're for democracy and educating children how to live in a democracy, and they're as democracy in that they're the first major public institution children come into contact with that tells them a bit about what their place in a democracy is. Now, that's my thinking on it, David.
That's fantastic. Now, I appreciate we're coming towards the end of the show. And I wonder, you know, through the chapter, you talk about some kind of constraints or threats to kind of school as democracy. You mention about the damaging effect of mistrust among leaders, or our perception of leaders as being mistrustful. Also the going on a kind of more macro level, the global education reform movement, and then also just the kind of Weberian bureaucracy that we traditionally have had in Scotland schools. So I wonder if you want to touch on one or two of those and just expand about how they, as I say, they can constrain or are a threat to democratic principles and practices in schools.
Yeah, I think I would start with the bureaucracy first, because I want to distinguish between managers and leaders in schools. I think management is still very, very important. Most good functioning organisations that involve a lot of people need good management. So the school leader's role very often, and there are a lot of leaders in a school, you can be a teacher leader as well, as our standards make clear. But if you're put in a management position, you need to be a manager and a leader. And it's important to manage things well, manage finances, manage time. All these things need good management, albeit with engaging with the people who are managed, if you like. But the Global Education Reform Movement, that's the acronym for that is GERM. And I thought that was a great acronym because, you know, it's a concept that originally from researchers in the Netherlands, I think, about how over the last 30 years, school have been absolutely dominated. Schooling discussion in the public realm, at political level, at national level, has been dominated by this idea of how do schools perform. And performance is often defined very narrowly in terms of examination results at the end of, you know, age 16 or national tests or whatever it is. But of course, schools are about a lot more than that. They're about, well, the kind of things we've talked about people learning how to live with each other, even though they have different values. Now, examinations are a good proxy indicator, I think, of what's going on, because if kids are orderly and they think they're getting something out of school, by and large, they'll work more within the rubric of what the school wants for them, and they'll participate well in the exam system to the best of their abilities. But it's about a lot more than that, and I think there's other indicators, I think, that the Scottish school system is working well. I mean, we are, and these are not just true of Scotland, of course, but I think it's also true of Scotland that we are a more diverse society, more tolerant of diversity, more accepting and respectful of diversity. I think we're a society that is less violent. The amount of criminal behaviour by youngsters under the age of 16 is much less than it was in the 70s. The number of children excluded from mainstream schools is much less than it was in the 70s. There's been a fairly, you know, marked decline in these areas. There's a lot of other things in which are important but difficult to measure about what schools do. And one of the problems with the measuring thing and the heavy accountability that often goes with that is that it gives the impression that that's the only thing that matters, and that then transfers itself to the teachers. You know, that the only thing that matters is results. But children aren't important just as units of performance in a global education system where we're in some kind of global competition, which globalization, of course, has increased, for economic success. I mean, it's important that we, you know, have a good economy, but it's also important that our children develop well as human beings and become good citizens and feel that they themselves have the prospects of a happy and fulfilled life. And these are all things that involve a lot more than just how well you do in exams. So I think the kind of narrow, often what's called managerialist view, you know, that schools are there to produce outcomes, and the most important outcome is exam success, and that's the measure of performance, that can translate into a very sad message in a school that children are only important because of how they perform in examinations. And that obviously is not important. And so I think that the profession, the teaching profession, are all the time and have been since I've been involved since the 80s when this kind of philosophy came into schooling, have been involved in trying to preserve that broader concept of what education is. And sometimes it's gone up and down over the years, but sometimes it has felt that were pushing against our political masters rather than working with them. The new Curriculum for Excellence in Scotland has given some traction to a wider kind of concept of education again. But I do think that the narrowness of our accountability measures in education still pushes pressure on teachers to see children as units of performance rather than as children, valuable, every single one in their own right, and to meet them where they come from rather than meet them with expectations of this is what you will do. And it's a balance of those two things, I think, that are needed in any good school that's working well.
Thank you so much for this great advice to end on, Danny. And just before we head off, the book we've been kind of referring to is Chapter 2 in School Leadership, edited by Jim O'Brien and published by Dunedin. I wonder if there are any other kind of key texts or links that you could leave us with.
Well, I think actually that book itself has got a massive bibliography almost every recent text written about school leadership. I mean, obviously, since I retired from being head teacher, I've had a chance to write a bit myself, so I've been pumping out one or two books over recent years. I think I would rest with the bibliography on that book. I mean, I'm sure you can get it in most public libraries in Scotland and find a lot of good reading, or you can Google it and, you know, get it from there, or Google me and get my, you know, I've got a lot of readings on the website that goes with my book, Schooling Scotland, that will take people into the kind of wider territory we've been talking about, David.
That's great, Danny. Thank you so much for taking time out to appear on Radio EduTalk. We'd love to have you back on into 2017. As you say, you're still writing away and involved in work at the university, and it would be great to have you back on the show sometime to talk about any of your current
projects.
Well, thank
you, David, and thanks for the work you're doing with this radio. I mean, I'm sure your listeners all know that you've got a massive archive now of really interesting interviews with and it's a great collection, actually, for anybody interested in Scottish education to follow up online.
Thank you very much, Danny. And yeah, we're going to take a few weeks off over the turn of the year. And certainly, I suppose you kind of prompted me there, Danny, just to say to yourself and any listeners that you know, if you've got suggestions for guests, for people, writers, academics, practitioners, etc., who you'd like to hear on Radio EduTalk in 2017, then just drop me a line on Twitter or via email. So, yeah, but thanks a lot for your support, Danny.
Thank you.
Okay, take care. I'll speak to you again.